Richie got it. Freed up in front, they score! A beautiful pass from Cam and Kasha coming down the slot, and the Leafs get a huge goal just 2 minutes into the third period. It's 2-0.
You know, you look at that goal, it's a great forecheck by Nick. He gets a good stick on it. Great play, good finish. It's a huge goal for us, you know, all three of those guys contributing. I thought it was a good opportunity to give those guys a go together. Richie and Kasha have got good history together, playing together in Anaheim, and it's been productive. So it's something we've been thinking of doing for quite some time, and thought today was the right night.
Look at Sheldon Keefe shouting out Nick Richie.
Woo!
The whole team is rolling. It's the Fan Morning Show, where also the whole team is rolling. I'm J.D. Bungus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. Good morning, good morning, good morning to you
all. Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning.
So I'm not going to start with Leafs. I have a little piece of business.
Oh.
So, as some people may know, I like to put a little sprinkle down on games.
Really?
Yeah.
Especially, I hadn't heard.
Yeah, especially standalone football games, where a certain somebody just desperately was clinging on to his Steelers plus 6.5. Mm. I want to turn this game off. I want to go to bed, but I'm kind of like, you know, I'll start the new episode of Succession and I'll watch the Steelers with a kind of passing eye. I start the Succession episode and the Steelers score a field goal. It's a 14-point game. They haven't been able to stop the Chargers. Not like for a second. It's like Justin Herbert will go on tonight to set the record for most rush yards and pass yards. No one's ever done what he's done this time. I'm thinking, yeah, it's whatever. It's a field goal. It's a 14-point game. Chargers going to get the ball back. So they get a stop. They get a block punt. All of a sudden, it's a ball game. I'm going, are you kidding me? Okay, now the Chargers are going to do their thing. Casey Hayward, the stud Steelers defensive lineman who everybody around football respects. Tip, drill, interception. One of those ones where the DB is looking up at the football for what feels like forever. You never see, you always want your team to get that interception, and they never do whenever it's tipped up in the air like that. It's always some DB who drops it. Not this Steelers DB. He catches it. He brings it in. He pays the price, too. This offensive lineman just completely drills him. And I'm watching this game, and all of this is happening. And I know, as a sports fan, that the game of the year is unfolding before my very eyes. And our group chat is silent, right?
Oh, and, yeah, crickets.
Yeah, it was crickets. And I'm thinking to myself, what's the procedure here? Do I text them? Do I say, wake up, you're going to want to see this? Do I let them sleep? Like, both of you, I'm guessing, slept through this game.
I was still doing Raptors postgame stuff.
So you saw?
Oh, I didn't see. No, I was like on my computer doing Zoom.
Oh,
that sounds made up.
That sounds real. And it also sounds like no one in the Raptors.
Yeah, nobody said, guys.
Nobody's like, whoa.
I mean, I saw some tweets about it, but I was not invested in the game as you were.
Well, but you weren't invested in seeing.
Oh, no, I was invested in that part. But also I was like working.
Yeah. So he was working for you, madam. Yeah.
The mistake I made was once the Raptors game ended, instead of turning that game on, I looked at the score and I just turned the TV off while I was working on my computer.
Yeah.
And I should have just turned it on.
Yeah. That was toughy. How about you? But what's the protocol here? Like, if a game like that of that magnitude is happening and the Chargers go on to win, it's just this, it was an insane game. I've seen very few quite like that. The Steelers in their history, when they're trailing in the fourth quarter down 17, they've never won a football game.
So I would say there are two things that swing this for me. Yeah. One is...
Who's playing?
Yeah. And this is not a super sexy game, and there's no stakes. Like, there are stakes in terms of, like, making the playoffs, but we're in week 11 here. It's not, like, a playoff game or something like that. The other thing, and this is the more important factor, is once you have missed the start of that crazy fourth quarter, it loses some of the... like juice of why it's so special.
That is not accurate.
Yes, yeah, I'm not in on any part of that take.
I missed the beginning of the comeback. It's not even worth watching. Yeah.
No, I'm not saying it's not worth watching. I'm saying it's not worth waking a colleague up to what? Like, if you miss those two touchdowns 26 seconds apart, like, yeah, you. But are you going to wake someone up to be like, hey, a tie football game, yeah. that you don't really care
I
about.
Would, here's what I would say. This is the, what's the procedure? If sports are happening of that ilk, wake me up, call me. If you don't think I'm watching, if I don't reply in the group chat, I would like it to be known to the two of you that the rule for me is call me. My phone's on silent. Do it twice. Do it twice. Wake me up. To me, that's the bat phone where old JD fell asleep during great sports. Don't care. Wake me up. Bat phone. Bat phone. Bat phone. Bat phone. I think there's a limit to this, right? If it's a sport with 82 games, it better be insane. You better be waking me up for, hey, the Raptors are going. Actually, I wouldn't fall asleep during Raptors, but hey, the Warriors and the Lakers. LeBron and
there's a fight
Steph.
On the court.
Yeah, yeah.
Should I wake you up for that?
LeBron, Isaiah Stewart is throwing chairs in the ring.
Yeah, yeah. LeBron punched somebody in the face and then was like, I'm not a dirty player and no one think and everyone defends me, so it's fine. What's your procedure, Ailish? I have called you?
No, because my phone would not have rang regardless. Yeah, it is on like no. Even when you call like twice, it's supposed to like ring, you know? No.
What?
I don't have that feature on, yeah.
Yeah, it's do not disturb.
Yeah, no, mine's just on mute.
Yeah, but then doesn't it vibrate?
Nope. Completely silent. I'm sleeping. Don't bother me.
I just picture Ailish with the sleep mask and the earplugs in and the phone on mute. Yeah. And it's like, there's a fire.
See you in the morning.
People are like pounding the door. Ailish, please.
If whatever. She ever is late for work, we have no way of alerting her or getting a hold of her.
It's actually very accurate.
But okay, let's say we live in a fantasy world where you have your phone not on ultra mute.
It's like when Andy and Daryl in The Office, Andy keeps texting Daryl.
Oh, he loses the text
and
privileges.
He's like, you have one more opportunity and it better be good. And he texts him when the pigeons are outside fighting over the ice cream. And he's like, you made it. So that's kind of how I would view it. You have like one opportunity and if you blow it, never again.
But would you have even wanted to? I didn't want to text you guys. I didn't even want to put out a text because I didn't want to potentially wake somebody up and then have one of you go like, is this going to be
I trust your judgment.
Is this is this going to be on the test?
Also, like,
that's true.
If a text wakes me up and I'm that light a sleeper, that's my fault for leaving my phone on.
That's true.
I will say there is...
In the future, just text me.
Okay.
Like, don't call, but text me and then...
Don't call, text. Yeah. Okay, you know what? So texts are fine.
Last night
texts are fine.
If I knew, like, I saw the score, but, like, at the time that I made the decision of, like, okay, I'm working now, it was, what, 27-10? I think. So like, that's not like, a text being like, yo, are you watching this game?
Yeah.
I would at least turn it back on in the background.
I felt bad. I felt bad in hindsight because the game was even better. But the problem was, is that there were, to Blake's point, it was tough in terms of what point of the game do you text someone? Because if I wake you up and you turn it on and then all of a sudden the Chargers go down and score again, and now it's a 14-point game. Well, who has egg on their face? You know, me. I'm like, I swear it was looking cool. You guys should have seen it. There was a tip. that was the risk. That was the risk.
I think the tip drill is the point to call.
Yeah.
Or text.
Yeah.
Because then it's like it's a one-score game and possession has just swung back and they've already scored three times that quarter.
It was insane. It was truly, truly, truly insane.
This was one of those ones, too, that I get up this morning and the first look of sports, because I watched Leafs and Raptors last night, so I don't need to catch up there. And then my first look is, oh, fantasy.
And oh, my God.
Justin Herbert has almost 500 total yards. Like, that must have been such a monster. 382 passing with three touchdowns and a pick and 90 yards rushing. That is just a monster game.
Austin Eckler had four touchdowns. And Bills fans might be aware, but Jonathan Taylor had five yesterday. We'll get to that later. But if you played any one of those, oh, poor Ailish, her face, she just stared forward and like.
I don't want to hear it.
No, but I love that we do a sports show and I brought that up and Ailish looked as though I had just said something like wildly inappropriate to her. like something that was completely.
That's another reason you shouldn't have woken
like
me up.
Like I crossed a line. I know. I'm sorry. So here's the good news. The Leafs look great again.
Yeah, great.
Granted.
Love it.
Against another team, this is now the second time this season because they got the Golden Knights where the roster was like, who's playing tonight? Mm-hmm. And
as it'll be known forever, the Amadio game.
Yeah, the Amadio game. And then they get an Islanders team that also
stinks.
Yeah.
In their new barn they keep talking about that looks literally like a regular hockey arena.
Here's
like
here's
the Coliseum.
My goodness. I'm sorry to take us back.
$3 billion.
Jonathan Taylor was worth 51 fantasy points.
Yeah, that's
yesterday.
Enough.
And that's only in half PPR.
Yeah.
So you get a little extra juice if...
No,
my goodness.
Yeah, you You didn't have, you know what the good thing is though, is if you played Jonathan Taylor in fantasy, you didn't even have to like worry about the rest of your day. It was just over and you just went, like, okay, hey, you know,
close the laptop.
Yeah. I'm going to just watch sports for fun. So the Leafs take care of business against this shorthanded, this depleted, this whatever Islanders team. And they look really good doing it. And Mitch Marner scores twice. He opens the scoring with
a little shorthanded goal.
A little pretty shorthanded goal.
Can't score on the power play, but he can score shorthanded. That's something.
When's the last time?
92 games ago.
Yeah.
Last time he scored a power play goal.
That's
a long time.
A long time.
That's a long time.
92 games ago is not even last year.
I don't even know.
No, it's not.
That's a long, long time ago.
Last season was 56 games.
Was that right?
Because
I kind of just threw that number out there.
No, last season was 56 games. It was. He didn't score a power play goal.
Oh, yeah. It's 92 or something. Maybe 93 now. I don't know. I heard the number on the broadcast.
Boy. Gets the shorthanded goal, though. There's no doubt that that feels better.
There's nothing more depleting being on the other side of that when somebody scores and you shorthanded. You're just like, what are we doing? And the fans are booing in their new Coliseum.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
No, Ailish, that's really the take, is that unless it's a football stadium, those, like, hockey and basketball arenas, they go, this is new. On television, you can't tell
I
any of the
honestly was like, you could have told me it was this, like, a regular arena. Like, I don't see where the $1.whatever billion went into. You maybe have to be there.
Blake's been to the most, though. Blake's been to, by far, the most out of all of us because you've traveled for Raptors. Like, you've done a lot of Raptors travel.
Yeah, I've been to 16 NBA.
Yeah.
And 22 baseball.
Yeah, that's way more than I've been to.
He definitely have a spreadsheet, eh? Like, fact that he knows exactly the numbers.
No, because I've counted before. Yeah. You get asked, how many stadiums have you been to?
That's cool.
Or, like, had I not chosen to do this job this year, part of how... like, when I was at The Athletic, Eric Kareen and I would split up the travel.
You were only here.
Yeah, anyways. I've only ever worked here.
Thank you.
But we
correction.
We would split up the travel, and part of how I pick... which games I want is like, yeah, obviously I want to be do the San Francisco game where they have two off days after.
Right.
Ooh,
like, obviously,
nice.
Whoever's on this trip is that's the number one pick. I want to do Chicago and New York as a matter of those cities rule, and I have friends there. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's like I want to check off new arenas.
Cool.
Unless they're in like Charlotte or Indiana or something.
Right. But given all of your experience, like even when I was at that Wizards game, I noticed that they had a much better presentation of the game with screens, like their Jumbotron was better, and then they had screens in different corners. But overall, the arena is the same, right? Like they're all, it's like, hey, you walk out and you walk in a circle and you look around and oh, there's a team shop and it's way too expensive. Now let's get out of here. Let's go back to our seats. Like whenever they're like, oh, the luxury boxes, we don't see that. We're the peasants.
I'm
we
not
don't
going
know.
Into yeah. a luxury box, let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly. It's always like, oh, the suites. You should see these suites. Like, who? This isn't for us. For the rest of us, every arena is the same. So you're dead on. You're dead on. So back to Mitch Marner. We have all these stories.
By the way, it's 105 if you include playoffs.
Yeah.
I just, boy. Just busted open the game logs.
Yeah, that's 105. It's a long time.
Oof.
It's many moons ago. For a long time, Nick Ritchie has felt like the missing puzzle piece. Michael Bunting feels like an imperfect option on the top line, but he's an option nonetheless. They've flipped Marner and Nylander. Mm. Matthews has had a slow start to his year from an even strength scoring standpoint. I think we can admit that despite whatever. The Kampf-Kasha combination has been a revelation. The goaltending has been incredible for this team. The defense pairings have had some ups and downs. But
they've been
the-
stable enough. We haven't had to talk about it for like 2 weeks.
Bing bong.
That's what you want to hear. Bing bong.
Yeah,
bing
the,
bong.
The biggest conversation with the defense right now is like, should you keep rotating those three guys as the number seven, or do you ride with one set? That's the big, like now that Muzzin has
figured
gotten back to being a reasonable version of Muzzin.
Mm-hmm.
Settles a lot of stuff down. Shocker. Your second best defenseman starts playing like it. And
all of this is to say that I weirdly am back to the feeling I had in 2019, which is that Mitch Marner is the heartbeat of this team. Auston Matthews might be the face. Mm. John Tavares might be the captain. William Nylander might be playing the best hockey of his career, and he might be the best bang for your buck value player on the team. Again, Kasha Kampf, they might be sort of this developing identity. Jack Campbell might be playing his way on a Team USA. Morgan Riley might be the actual fan favorite legacy player that started here, whatever. Mitch Marner, when he's going the way that he's been going lately, he always feels like the heartbeat of the team. He feels like he is the way that he's the one that changes this team from they go okay, they go bad, to, oh my God, this team is unstoppable. Oh my God, this team is great. This is two games in a row where I thought that he was the team's by far best player. The Penguins game, they lose, and whatever. They didn't outplay the Penguins by any stretch of the imagination. But I thought Marner was buzzing. He plays in all areas of the ice. His penalty killing is absolutely underrated. His defense, I think, has always been underrated. Mm-hmm. His offensive spark that he gives, there's just very few players in hockey where you notice them and you go, oh, that's different. Oh, that's very, very different. And Mitch Marner is one of those players. And I feel for him, because he's the ultimate question mark when it comes to the postseason. Like, he's the number one guy where nothing in this regular season is going to matter. And I feel like this is all we're talking about, is this one player who can be that over the course of these last couple of games. But we will not know, no matter what he does, whether he can get it done in the playoffs, because the last 2-3 years have told us that he can't.
When you say he's the heartbeat of the team, I think that is, I hadn't actually thought about it in that sense, but it makes a lot of sense, because fans also completely shift their perspective of the team dependent on how he's playing. And it's always, that's the issue, is Mitch Marner's not producing. The Leafs aren't going to make it in the playoffs. Now he's, as you said, everywhere on the ice. He's creative. He's offensive, defensive. He's buzzing. The team, same thing. They're buzzing. So it's funny that you say that, because last night I jokingly tweeted, sarcastically, people, you might begin to ask, is Mitch Marner underpaid? And everyone just bit on it as a joke. It's a joke.
What did you expect?
It's a joke.
Yes, but what did you expect?
I know, and you sent that funny thing. Yeah. But it's just funny how fans, if I'm thinking as a fan, completely shift how they view the Toronto Maple Leafs based on how Mitch Marner is doing.
And it makes sense. You talk about who's the most important player, who's the heartbeat. And to me, heartbeat is generally, hey, who's having the most impact over the course of any game, no matter what the game script ends up being. And you look at Marner, and he's first on this team in 5-on-5 minutes among forwards. Mm. You look at some of the storylines from this season. Oh, well, the power play is way better. He's tied for first on the team in power play minutes among forwards. You
Not
say
goals.
Oh, the penalty kill has gotten to elite this year. He's second only to Kampf in penalty kill minutes among forwards. Camp. So you're looking at all three scenarios where Marner is the most, he's the heaviest usage guy on this team. I think it gets underrated a little bit, just how much it says about a guy when he's PP1 and PK1 and on your top line. Mm-hmm. There is no scenario in which Mitch Marner, you can't go a stretch of game without Mitch Marner being extremely important. And I think that's why the lows feel so low and why something like, oh, he has a couple of bad playoffs can feel so demoralizing and deflating. Because, yeah, if Mitch Marner doesn't have it that night, or he's in a slump, or he gets in his own head or whatever, you see it in every facet of this team's game, because he's so important to all of them.
I just remember the end of last year, how angry everyone was, myself included. I like I said, I love, I don't know if I love this team anymore the same way that I used to when I was a kid, but I love the fans the same way. Mm-hmm. I really, really, truly, deeply care about Toronto Maple Leaf fans, because I know what that connection has done for me in my life with family members, with friends, with people that I never thought I'd have anything in common with, what it's done just in terms of, connections that I've made. And I want Leafs Nation not to be the brunt of every single joke, and I hated it that they were, again. But it's impossible when you see Mitch Marner play that way to not be reminded, oh my God, we're all in this, red fog of just anger, and people are ready to trade Mitch Marner for anything because he has bad playoffs. And why a general manager is paid to be a general manager is to think above that and to look at it and go, here's the thing, guys. I know you really want me to trade this guy right now because he had a bad week, but also that. Look at what he can do there. He's in this no-win situation, because his playoffs have been complete and abject disasters over the last 3 years.
Yeah, he's the poster boy for the discussion around the Leafs of okay, you're good again, but let's see it in the playoffs.
He's overpaid by around, I would say, $2 million. especially given where we came in. The contracts at the time and the contracts now. Honestly, mm-hmm. I know people say, oh, the pandemic shifted things and all the flat cap. It's like all of Mitch Marner's peers got paid far less than that even during that offseason. And Mitch Marner set the market. And we all expected to see these like revolutionary contracts. And it turned out to be not so much the case. So he's overpaid. He's disappeared in the postseason. And he's had some, frankly, some bratty moments. He has. He's also had some stuff where there have been some... He's now the Toronto rumored player, right? Like everybody has a story about something that's connected to Mitch Marner and they love painting it in a negative light, right?
Mm-hmm. Like I heard he doesn't actually know Drake lyrics. He just looks them up on Genius before he puts a caption on.
Well, he put the wrong caption on the lyrics. I'm saying. So he is just in this really tough spot. And so that's why I do think he's underrated. Because I'm watching him play, and when we're talking heartbeat, Blake, you bring up all those things about how he's in all those facets, and yet we love to talk about Nylander more. Nylander's been the best player. Nylander's been the best player. And it's like, okay, I think Nylander's been great, but it's pretty clear to me anyways, like maybe you guys don't disagree with me, but it's like when they're going at their very best all the time, Marner's the better player. Like, there's a reason why he got more money.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think, I wonder sometimes if he played for, I don't know, any other team, how much they would probably cherish and like, you know, give him a positive energy in a sense, like when he's down or when, like, instead of like bullying, I'm using air quotes, but kind of bullying him and using him as the guy that as soon as things are bad with the team, it's Mitch Marner. In the playoffs last year, it's Mitch Marner. When we watched the All or Nothing series and they had that conversation, Dubas and Marner, even the narrative around that was like, what was that? Is he coddling him? Is he babying him? Like, shouldn't he just say, like, buddy, pick it up? I wonder how different it would be, and hopefully we never get the opportunity, to see him on another team and how fans idolize him. And it's tough because he's on a team with arguably four big superstars. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of pressure also for him, knowing that he probably goes in saying, I'm getting a lot of money. I hold myself to a higher standard. I maybe feel that extra pressure because I'm in this market that everyone just like tears you apart if things are bad. So we got a text here. Mitch Marner is the team. Matthews is a sniper. That's all. And I think it's a little bit more than that. But when you present this narrative that he is the heartbeat, I can't agree more with that idea that he drives the momentum of the team.
Yeah, if he wasn't incredibly, incredibly important, him having a rough playoff series would not have been the thing everyone takes away from it. Because you see, it's like, oh, like, you're so close in a series like that. And that's like, you just need even like an average Mitch Marner, and that series is no problem.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just, again, it gets back to no win for this season. Because I almost feel like when he's playing this way, it just aggravates some people even further.
It's like, where was this?
Yeah.
Yeah, like you're right, no win. It's like if he's playing well, it's like, oh, yeah, you have to know time.
He's supposed to. He's getting paid $11 million.
And if he's not playing well, it's like, well, trade the guy. He sucks. And then, okay, all season long, even if he is playing well, it's like, well, we'll see in the playoffs. Like, doesn't matter now. It's like, okay, kind of does matter now. Like, it's nice to see some consistency and, like, see that he's performing well. And maybe that gives him the confidence boost he needs going into the playoffs. But, yes, of course, we can't really evaluate how important he is until he does something super great in the playoffs. And that's still a long ways away. So we're going to be a little bit patient here.
Maybe he'll get a power play goal in the first game of the playoffs.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. The streak's up to like 160 at that point.
I'm the worst because something happens like that. And even if the player is on my own team, I'm always like, let's see how long this can go, you know, because sports can be
break a record.
Sports can get a little monotonous at times when you do what we do. Right. And so you just kind of want to see something freakish. And so when a guy doesn't have a power play goal in that long, I kind of go, hey, as long as other guys score the goals and he keeps getting the assists, like, I don't mind if it's coming down to whether or not he gets one or you don't get one, then give me the streak breaker.
Whoever's running that Sportsnet stats Twitter account better find out like who's got the longest drought in playoff. In power play goals.
Okay, so speaking of Sportsnet stats, I want to flip this over to Blake now because last night was an ass kicking, right? And I text Blake in the middle of the game and I go, hey, I know you're busy with Raptors right now. You're probably going to have to catch up after this. I don't know what the process is, but we're at a point where the Raptors game has started. And I go, hey, are the Leafs going to set a record for limiting high danger chances? Because Joseph Woll, at this point, it's like close to the end of the second period. And The Islanders, to me, have not had a shot on net. Like, not one that I was ever like, oh, my God, that might go in. They had some shot attempts where I thought they had, like, halfway decent looks, but they missed them. And I go, hey, let me know what this is, because this would be really interesting. Because to me, one of the other stories of the game was the Leafs just choked the life out of them. They were an anaconda. There was no space anywhere on the ice. And I was very, very surprised by your answer.
Yeah, so this is at the same time, a good look into why, when I throw out some of these descriptive stats, like I always try to re-explain the context of them. So when I say high danger chances, you know, not every segment, but occasionally I'll be like, hey, by the way, this is what this means in case someone doesn't know, or to refresh the fact that high danger is not a subjective evaluation. It's a spot on the ice. It's a rebound or a rush or something like that. So last night felt like this smothering defensive performance where, yes, it's very cool that Joseph Woll gets a shutout. Also, it feels like he was not tested, basically.
He's gotten a shutout in half of his NHL games.
Amazing.
Yes. So, last night, the Islanders were credited with 15 high-danger chances, which is the second most the Leafs have given up all year. And
what?
Yes. Now, the reason for that is not because the Leafs had a very bad game and the Islanders were kicking their doors down. It's because the Islanders basically did not shoot unless it was in the kind of home plate area in front of the net.
They're so trying to rig the stats.
They're trying to rig the stats. And so this is a case where those stats are a little misleading in, you know, oh, the Leafs only outchanced them by one in high danger areas. And it's like, no, not if you consider who the players are and what the play looks like and stuff like that. And then it's also like, it's a little amusing because you look at all the shot chances and the Leafs blew their doors off like all game. It just happens that the Islanders, you know, their little heat map shot chart is just one blotch right in front of the net. It's just the only spot they shot from. And like, if you're Joseph Woll, the book on him coming in was he makes the standard saves. He makes the positionally sound saves. It's the scramble opportunities where he's maybe a little shakier. So that, I think, plays to Woll's kind of game.
So Ailish gave a great stat of Woll's shutouts.
He's undefeated. Yeah. He's got a shutout in 50% of his NHL games.
Incredible.
He's literally unbelievable.
I'd like to give you a stat. The New York Islanders had zero high danger chances last night. That is honestly, that is shifting the way that I view that statistic. I'm sorry. And I know
the way I describe it is like, it's not a subjective thing. It's shot location.
I know.
And then you get a little bump if it's a rush or a rebound, because generally the shooting percentage is higher on those. But yeah,
abolish that stat.
It's not abolish the stat, but this does get to kind of a thing where sometimes we do look at these charts and these game scores, and I'm really not trying to do a bash analytics thing here because I actually like having them all, and that's obvious. But I just was shocked that it could be that.
Yeah.
Because anybody who watched that game never felt like there was a threat at all at any moment in that game. Like, text me, did any Leaf fan ever have a moment in that game where he went, oh, it was a 1-0 game the entire time, and I never went, oh, no, they're going to let this one slip away. It felt like, oh, they kept giving the Islanders time to find themselves. There was one little moment where the Islanders got a power play, and then as the power play was closing, they were buzzing a little bit, and they were firing the puck around, and I thought, so maybe they got one or two danger chances in that opportunity.
Yeah, I can remember a couple where the Tavares, Nylander, Kerfoot line was pinned in their own end a little bit.
Yes, and other than that, there was nothing. And so the idea that they got only one more high danger chance than the Islanders last night, or the idea that the Islanders were, what was it in terms of the second most high danger chances they've given up this year?
Yeah,
all season.
No, it's ludicrous. Like, it's absolutely ludicrous. And that's why, again, not that anybody isn't doing this, so it's kind of a straw man, but yeah, watch the game. Like, I will always trust watching the game in a one-game sample over that.
Well, this is the thing is, like, it's the analytics guys who, like, originally started tracking this stuff that watch the games even more because they have to hand tally this stuff before we had the text for it. But yeah, when you give up 16, quote-unquote, or 15, quote-unquote, high-danger chances, and you look and the person who had the most is Richard Panik.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, we have different definitions of what a high danger chance is here.
Remember when I said that the Leafs were the new Islanders?
Yeah.
Just saying.
You're right.
Just saying.
Hey, you're right. Here's the thing, too. They're So six of their last seven games, unders.
Mm-hmm.
And walk-away unders. No sweat unders.
Not even close.
Exactly.
They love these little tight games.
And I thought about it yesterday because it came down to 5.5, and it was like 5.5 with.
Mm-hmm. Wall.
Yeah.
I thought so, too. I thought that was the game to zag. I stayed away from it. I actually didn't bet it. But I thought that was totally the game to grab it and say, oh, okay, like, regression's going to happen here. Both teams on a back-to-back.
Now, it's
going to
be a sloppy night.
Yeah, well, apparently, because he stops every high-danger chance that the Islanders can throw at him. So, a big reason why this team has been so suffocating has been this Kampf-Kosha line, right? Mm-hmm. And now it's officially just the Kampf-Kosha line. We've always sort of thought of it that way. No offense to Pierre Engvall, but those two guys have been clearly the drivers of it. Kampf is the superior defensive player. Kosha gives them this offensive boost. They seem to be this beautiful pairing that, honestly, you wish they were almost from the same country so that they could go play at the Olympics together. They're beautiful together.
But they grew up playing together.
Yeah,
they're best friends.
Yeah, like they're
every time they score, oh my God, when they jump into each other's arms and their face is, you know, just so smiley. It's a good feel-good moment.
Wait, is Kosha Czech? Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, so
yeah, they're
actually,
BFFs.
Then great. Then they're going to be on the Olympic team together. They're going to be this perfect
pairing.
They're
literally incredible.
Thomas figured it out. They made it perfect. I love watching the two of them play. But yesterday, they put Nick Ritchie on that line, and I go, I don't know how I feel about this.
Exactly. Right before the game, I was like, oh, my God, don't drag them down. But I think that he was a great fit there.
All right, well, have you guys seen, I'll try to keep it Ailish's age, Mean Girls?
I've seen Mean Girls.
JD, you've seen Breakfast Club?
Well, I've seen both those movies.
Okay, you've seen Breakfast Club, you've seen Heathers.
I don't like how you
Heathers,
put
maybe.
It to me like, oh, I've seen Breakfast Club.
Well,
like,
I've seen all of these, yes.
Breakfast Club is a better example, but I thought maybe I was overshooting.
I was like, Breakfast Club came out before I was born, but yes. Yeah. Don't try to make me be like, and you grew up with Breakfast Club.
anyway.
You were in the Breakfast Club.
This is a standard trope where you have the nerds and you have the bully and they can all only reach their full potential when they come together and pull in the same direction.
Sweet.
And I'm not saying Richie's a bully or Kosha and Kampf are nerds, but when you talk about like player archetypes and the, you know, you guys obviously tease me for the analytics stuff on Kosha and Kampf.
Yeah, we do.
And Richie is the polar opposite of that. It's nice. It's like, it's just it's a Mean Girls Breakfast Club kind of situation.
So Nick Ritchie is Judd Nelson?
No, Nick Ritchie's Emilio Estevez in this case, where the little nerd kid has to help Emilio Estevez. He could be Judd Nelson if you want, but
wasn't Judd Nelson the bully?
Yeah, but Emilio Estevez was too. He tapes the guy's butt, Larry Lester's butt cheeks together.
I don't remember
Larry
that.
Larry Lester, what
Yeah, he like opens up like really emotionally at one point about how badly he feels about bullying guys because he's like the captain of the wrestling
team.
He's
the jock.
And his dad's really hard on him and stuff. But he's a jock, but he's also a bully. Judd Nelson's just kind of a jerk.
Yeah. See, I view, this is my breakdown of it. Richie is Judd Nelson.
Okay. Either way, it's going to work.
Kosha is Emilio Estevez because he's just so good that it's like you're the top of the food chain. You're that guy.
Minnesota Miracle Man.
Right. And then what is it? I don't know the actor's name who plays the kid who puts the sunglasses on and tries to look cool.
Oh, Michael something.
Yeah, Anthony Michael Hall. You know the one. Anthony Michael Hall. Okay. And that's Kampf. He's the real nerd. Because I think Kampf is now the sexiest guy to the nerds. He's got to be.
Well, he's also, not to overdo the nerd thing, but he historically doesn't score. Mm-hmm. So there's a thing there, too, he won goal in 56 games last year. And two of his three this year are accidents.
Yeah, they are.
Could call him the Breakfast Club line.
There you go.
I like that.
See, I like that, too. That was good. That was a really nice little.
I like that.
Yeah,
we got there.
See, you guys were the Breakfast Club line right there, just like kind of making it work. So I kind of think that you stick with it for now.
Yeah.
Not to play just like the overly recent result and just to put too much stock into it, but that was Richie looked good. Richie got a point. I think that there's not as much stress maybe for him.
Less
playing,
pressure.
Right?
He can be himself. He's not gripping his stick so tight on the top line, being like, I'm going to fall. I'm going to get knocked down from this line if I have one bad game.
I do worry a little bit about the speed in terms of ice tilting and how they try to drive play the other way. But even we saw on the Kosha goal of like, hey, a Richie hit, set that up.
Right. Mm-hmm. He's being more physical over the last couple of games. As soon as they signed Clifford, he knows. He heard, Clifford's coming to town, that air boy.
I
big, tough air boy.
These Kampf and Kosha have been amazing. Kasha has another game where I think he's done for the season.
Yeah, you're like, oh no, he got
well,
hit.
It just happens all the
time. Well, you got to put him in bubble wrap, honestly.
But that's the thing.
Makes me nervous.
But this year it's the opposite, where it's just he's the most resilient. He can take the most damage and can keep playing. So they've changed the dynamic of this team. I swear, their importance should not be understated. But if all of a sudden they can turn Nick Ritchie into a surplus value, then yeah, I don't even know what else to say about these guys.
Were Camp and Kasha the best offseason acquisitions of all time?
Well,
stay tuned.
I mean, look, they're also very inexpensive.
They
so
cheap.
If you're
I
talking
love
about
it.
Like, I mean, this is $2 per Winnie, but like if Richie's underperforming his contract, and then you look at that line, and now it's like,
kinda evens
oh no,
out
but
nicely.
The line, yeah, exactly.
The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, I can't wait for that Kasha Camp line to like frustrate Team Canada in the knockout stage of the Olympics,
don't tell
and
me that.
Everyone kind of turn on them, like, oh no, don't do it against us.
Yeah, that would be bad. I keep having that same. So I really want to see Team Canada play in the Olympics. Obviously,
yeah,
care deeply about it. I love Olympic hockey, but part of me looks at Team USA's roster, their blue line, their goaltending.
Yeah, I'm a little scared.
Austin Matthews at the top. I really don't think that I could ever, like, I would need a healing time if Matthews knocked out Team Canada and then he comes back and he's like, I'm on the Leafs again. Hello.
Hey guys.
Matthews knocks out Team Canada.
Plays
in a bad Marner game.
Oh.
That's the.
Blake. What you,
I know. That's,
come on.
Just ruin hockey forever. Just board it up.
Yeah.
Like, but there's still conversations that they might boycott.
Yeah, that's a bigger
I really hope that
conversation
that's
not for me. Not at the end of a block.
I know.
But yeah.
I just threw that out there.
Canada and the U.S. in the same group as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of Canada-U.S., Canada's not on my A-list from yesterday's performance in Kingston.
Well, we should get to the A-list.
We should.
We'll do that after a break.
I had a bad day yesterday. I'm grumpy.
You don't seem that grumpy, although you do seem kind of like you're taking shots.
You're saying grumpy like, with a big smile on your face. It's just like, you're not grumpy. You just feel like being an agitator today.
Also, right. Your grumpy is very different from Blake's and I's grumpy.
Yeah, that's right.
Very, very, very different.
It's more like angst.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Let's take a break. Let's come back and let's do the A-list. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD Bunkus, A-list 4-4, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 5-9 of the Fan.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. That's the sweet, sweet sound of Kasha and Camp skating out to be awarded first star of the game together, holding each other.
As Richie walks out of the tunnel doing the Judd Nelson fist in the air.
Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Thanks, Vic, for playing that. That's their theme song. It's been taken from Breakfast Club. It's time for the A-list.
Now, it's time for...
Let us A...
A...
The A-List.
A...
Shout out to Ryan on the text line that is placing a bet that Stewie steals our breakfast line word to keep the streak alive from people stealing stuff from our show.
By the way, I have a bone to pick with Bourne later about just that. Justin Bourne will join us at 9 o'clock.
Everyone steals our stuff. Sorry we get up and do it first.
Yeah,
and
everyone's like,
smart.
Oh, I'm not up early enough to
think.
Listen to your show. I just happen to have all the same takes and gimmicks and segments as you guys.
Put it in a spreadsheet. Let us know.
Yeah. Weird that the A in Anthony Stewart now stands for A-list and he's got his own one. And
you know what, though? All I ask of we're going to need to come up with a name for the people who listen to the Fan Morning Show. It's kind of tough because, like, Good Show, for example, I call them the Good People, which was very easy, right? Mm-hmm. People who listen to Good Show. Fan Morning Show is tough.
Fans.
Yeah, well, like the early birds, like, that doesn't work. Yeah, that's too corny. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, something along those lines.
Just call them the A-listers.
I don't mind that. The A-listeners?
Ooh, there's something there. All right.
If you are an A-listener, then... When you see the plagiarism against us,
just let us know.
No, just tag
Tag us in it.
Tag us in there. There's theft.
There should be a hashtag so we can, you know, sort it all on Twitter. Yeah.
When Justin Bourne's on the Leafs broadcast and does the fast breakdown with Blake Murphy, and then it was like, I mean, Justin Bourne. I'm Justin Bourne. Whoa. Call that out.
Oh, so what's on the A-list other than all our gripes today?
Yeah, a couple things, honestly, just a note. Thank you to the Toronto Maple Leafs for winning yesterday because I was having a tough day. The Bills got destroyed. It was disgusting performance.
They sure did.
They're a bunch of frauds. I feel just awful about it.
Josh Allen broke them.
Josh Allen broke them. Then Team Canada loses in overtime to United States from a comeback win on home ice. Mm-hmm.
Good
Kingston.
Crowd, at least.
Great crowd. Sold out crowd. Heart shattered.
Tough weekend for Kingston because Queens lost the Yates Cup, too.
Exactly. I care so much about the people in Kingston that I felt extra devastated about that one. Yeah. Then the Raptors just, they keep pretending that they're coming back. And I'm like, this is it. They're going to beat the Warriors. And then, yeah. So thank you for the Leafs for winning just save my day a little bit.
If you thought the Raptors were actually completing that fake comeback against the Warriors, you are a mark.
Yeah, that was the ultimate fake comeback. Yeah. That was your classic Matt Devlin where he's like, and the Raptors have got the lead
20! Yeah,
to 36 points in the fourth quarter. Let's go.
All right. On the A-list, we're going to see Austin Matthews Movember come to an end. He finally raised his $134,000 on the weekend. He got there for Movember, so he's shaving off his mustache. Remember I talked about this on Movember 1st, how there is the pledge that this year he'd actually shave his mustache off if he raised $134,000. Well, he's broke that number, so you're going to see that dirty stash shaved off.
Do we know, is he doing it immediately because he's raised $134,000?
You know what? He's going to wait. No, he's waiting till the end for sure. He's at $137,971. Mm. So there's something there.
I would just say early. To Lisa and to Austin Matthews and to all parties involved here, I don't like any of this. Other than raising money for a charity.
You think it's too much outside narrative?
No, I just don't want to, like, he's poppy. We already have the soundbite of his mom saying it makes him look more Mexican.
Because, like, he feels naked out there.
I just don't like it. I just like him as Pablo, as Poppy, as his, like, mama's number one candy baby.
I'm sure it'll grow back real quick. He's probably going to shave it off and then just continue growing it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
Pro men's health, but anti-mom. Yeah. That's a tough spot to be in.
Anyway, that's just a fun little note. Okay, great. Moving on. Tiger Woods is back swinging clubs 9 months after his scary car accident. He posted a video making progress. He's out on the course just, you know, chipping away, feeling good. Obviously, the internet was overjoyed to see Tiger back. Is he going to make a comeback? We'll have to see.
No. Tiger, this is awesome. I hope that we see him play golf again. Mm-hmm. But this is that was it. This is it. Like, he's not going to be winning majors again, and that's what matters for him. So there's going to be some people who listen to this that are Tiger fanatics, and you're going to be upset, and you're going to say that that's what everybody said before the Masters, and it's like, yep, that is what everybody said before the Masters. But now this is a completely different ball game. Mm-hmm. The rehab, so he's back to swinging clubs. We don't know how long it's going to be before he's playing competitive golf. Yeah. And by the time he's doing it, his ability to stay healthy enough, there's just too many things. There's just too many things to have to work your way back from. So my hope is that Tiger's around. Mm-hmm. My hope is that Tiger continues to be relevant. My hope is that we just end up with the goal of what it was before, which is just having Tiger around.
Around golf.
Around golf, but also just hanging around on a major Sunday. Yeah. Having Tiger in the mix and getting to
just
watch.
Just want to see that red shirt.
So you think that 2019 Masters is it?
For sure. Yeah. No, I don't even think that's that hot of a take. It's just that who doubted
Tiger
before.
Yeah, that one already came 11 years after his last one, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think everybody, myself included, should be very grateful for the fact that Tiger got that 2019 Masters. Mm-hmm. It really was.
For sure.
It was
it was incredible.
It's one of the greatest sports stories in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Truly.
It seemed like such a lock for so long that Jack Nicklaus's mm-hmm. majors wins record would fall, mm-hmm. and he's still three short.
Yeah, and he's never going to hit it. Sorry, but he's not going to. And if Tiger's just in tournaments, that's great to me. And if you think about what it does still for golf in terms of bringing in a casual fan, if he is relevant at a tournament, what it does for a fan that actually pays for a ticket where you can go see.
Helps put over the other golfers who are at the top of their game right now, too, because you tune in to see Tiger, and then you get to see and get to know some of these other guys.
The only thing is that I still don't really know what golf is without Tiger Woods, because every time he goes away, it just feels so much less relevant. And it did yet again this year. And they're like, you can try to inject it with all the fake Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau rivalry nonsense that happened. You can try to sell me on Jon Rahm, who's my favorite guy.
Wait, isn't there a golf game coming up?
A golf game
that,
coming up?
I thought they were going to have that 12-hole match.
Yeah.
Isn't it this like upcoming weekend? Thanksgiving weekend.
I don't know when that is. Is it?
Yeah, I thought it was up. No one's talked about it at all. Yeah,
okay.
The new match.
The thing is, they've done so many of them that they kind of lose a little bit of luster. But yes, okay, I will watch it if it's there.
Yeah, your guy Jon Rahm's top of the table right now.
Yeah,
that's
what I'm saying, though. I like a lot of these golfers right now. I really do. I like Morikawa. There's a bunch of guys that are interesting to me. But I'm not someone who's ever going to watch a tournament outside of a major unless Tiger Woods is at the top. There's no other person that you could text me and go, Jon Rahm's about to win the
Farmers.
Like when
you're sleeping to wake you up?
Yeah.
Like I love watching Matsuyama, but like I'm not going, like especially when there's busy Sundays, that's not, you've really got to fight to get the Sunday attention.
Anyway, just happy to see him out there.
Yeah.
Smiling. Hitting the balls.
Smiling.
I couldn't see his face, but I assume
he's smiling. Yeah, I was going to say, like, what video do you have?
All right. Next on the A-list, Jaina Hafford, the GOAT. She got her jersey raised to the rafters ahead of the Canada-USA rivalry game in Kingston. So that's pretty cool. She also had some help from the Tragically Hip, who were there talking about their memories of her playing. Is, you know, one of the only times that a women's hockey player gets their jersey raised to the rafters in their hometown. Thought it was really cool, really awesome to honor someone in their local neighborhood as well, and not just, you know, in the Hall of Fame and that's it. So I thought it'd be really cool if you're playing hockey in the Kingston area, you see a woman's jersey raised to the rafters, you're a young kid. I mean, Kingston's a big hockey town, so
her jersey number is also actually retired in Kingston minor hockey.
It's really cool.
Yeah. So no one could wear 15 coming up. Although
five Olympic games.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild.
Although
it's
sometimes five. I think that maybe is like the retiring of a jersey number at the youth level. I really like it as a thing, but I also think it would be really cool for someone who looks up
15.
To her to get like it's how every basketball player wears 23. But it's still cool.
I never really thought about that, but
I thought of it at it either.
But I actually kind of agree. I kind of agree with that.
Yeah, at the minor league level, anyway. Let these kids look up to her and wear, like, you'd probably have fights for who gets to wear number 15 when you see it up in the rafters.
Right. And now I'm thinking about that, just how important numbers were to me as a kid and getting the jersey number. And you know what was the worst was when your team got uniforms and they were to size. And so the number you wanted didn't fit you, you know? Or like for me, I was a libero in volleyball. Numbers didn't really matter.
Jerseys.
But I remember, but it's particularly in basketball, you would want a certain number. And they'd be like, no, that's not in your size. And you go, damn it.
So I was always, and this was the case in hockey too, I was always the person who was just like, I'll choose last, I don't care. Like, whatever's left.
I was a goalie in hockey, so you ended up getting...
Were you a 1 or a 30 or 31?
I wore a few different ones. Well, but
what's the one that you
won? 1 was my my go-to.
Of course, JD thinks he's number 1.
As long as there was a...
Number 1 candy baby?
Yeah, I liked 1, and I loved Felix Potvin, so I loved 29, and then I loved Curtis Joseph, and I switched to 31.
Wow.
As long as there was a C or an A on it, didn't care what number there was.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Last little quick tidbit before we go to break. Apparently.
He was like, give me a C. Give me an A.
This one was brought in actually by JD. So this is a guest appearance on the A-list. Yeah. You sent me this. Apparently, Scott Hansen does not use the bathroom.
Don't believe him.
For the entire 7 hours of NFL Red Zone.
I believe him.
I just think that's ridiculous.
Okay, I think it's incredibly unhealthy if he's not drinking enough water over 7 hours.
A dried up desert inside of him? There's no way you can't use the bathroom for 7 hours. Like, Us on the show, we run to the bathroom between every break, one of us, to pee.
Because we're drinking huge, we all have massive water bottles in front of us.
15 coffees. But you're telling me that he doesn't drink water during 7 hours? Like, your mouth would be like...
So here's the thing.
Gonna need a drop of that to go with the yum, yum, yum.
No, that's
But that's
gross.
Just ridiculous.
I don't want to hear that in isolation. Here's what I'll say. I actually give Red Zone a lot of crap. I call it no cred zone because I feel like if you actually watch Red Zone, you're not a real football fan. I'm sorry. That's just how I feel. I know how to navigate it.
I get it. I know your takes.
I have the ticket. I can move around the ticket. I have a couple of screens. It's not that hard.
We came up in a different era where there wasn't a Red Zone readily available, and you had to have StatTracker open in front of you and be bouncing around yourself.
I take pride in my ability to host Football Sunday and still make you feel like you're watching little bits of every single game that is relevant. You know, yesterday.
So where does this fall into his not going to the bathroom in 7 hours?
I'm saying that he doesn't get enough. No cred zone only applies to people who watch it.
No, he gets
all
the credit.
All cred zone for Scott Hansen. He's so good at that job. Every time I watch him, I go, man, this is a little too maybe inside baseball because we all do media job, but I always think like, what are the hardest jobs in media? Everybody in media is always like, oh, I have the hardest job. And in reality, obviously we do. But after us, Scott Hansen's is tough.
It's wild.
It's one day a week, but it's still, I think
the amount of work in that one day, like you better take all 6 days off after that.
Here's the thing though. I think that he does that because it's one of those situations where it's such a huge gig. And if you do it well, you're obviously going to get compensated. You're going to be a face. Mm-hmm. You're going to be a person. But it's a tough thing to pivot into. Like Scott Hansen, if he's not hosting Red Zone, has to host a different show on NFL Network. Mm-hmm. And no one sees that show. He's Scott Hansen. It's like, how many shows are like relevant to that degree in 2021 where you're the host of something and people go, oh my God, you're the host of this?
And like the people who don't even know his name necessarily, if you turn that on and heard a different voice, you'd be like,
yeah.
Yes. So I'm not arguing that he's not incredible.
I'm just asking,
how does he not go to the bathroom for 7 hours?
But this is what I'm saying. I think that job is so coveted and big
that he doesn't have time to pee.
No, that he's like a fighter cutting weight. Mm-hmm. He's like someone who before he goes into the weigh-in on Saturday is going, all right, no water before the show. I'm just drinking coffee.
So Monday he drinks like 2 gallons.
Oh, after the show.
Tuesday, 2 gallons.
Pee-pee and then
it's 1 gallon and then it's half gallon. And
maybe
then
he's like a camel.
Yeah.
I think you can, as someone who has a like horribly tiny bladder who could never even fathom, but I just think that you could pull that off if you're not drinking water. Yeah.